to go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Broke intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Kickoff live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we discuss all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. Today we're going to focus on the Buffalo Bills. As we started last week, we're going to start to preview each and every matchup that the Giants will go up against in terms of the regular season. So last week focused on mainly the division rivals. This week we're going to start to expand a little bit further. And Buffalo is a week 4 matchup on October 4th. The Giants will visit Buffalo. So momentarily we're going to hear from John Murphy, the Bills play-by-play announcer. He'll give us some insight on the makeup of that team, some of the offseason developments, and so forth. And then we'll get to your phone calls at 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation if you can't get to the phone using hashtag GiantsChat. We will get to your tweets. Obviously, multiple ways for us to interact with you, the listeners, you, the callers, throughout the course of the program. Anita, how's everything?
Everything's great. Everything's fantastic.
Good to hear.
Yeah. And I just, it's funny, I was having the conversation with somebody the other day, and I was just like, I was on the golf course, actually. It was yesterday, actually. And I'm saying to myself, my goodness, I can't believe how fast the summer is gone. Like, guys are going to be reporting at the end of this month. It's unbelievable to me that football season is already here. Don't you feel that way?
It flies by. We were talking about OTAs and minicamp. Wow. It felt like a few days ago, and now all of a sudden we are gearing up for training camp. And speaking of the season fast approaching, training camp fast approaching, as we mentioned off the top, we're going to be previewing the Buffalo Bills today. And we are now joined by the voice of the Buffalo Bills, John Murphy. John, Lance Meadow, Anita Marks here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Giants.com. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great, Lance. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. John, let's start with the quarterback position for the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, that is the big question mark as the team gets set for the 2015 campaign. They brought in Tyrod Taylor in March. Matt Cassel was acquired via trade, and obviously the incumbent E.J. Manuel. As the team enters training camp, how would you assess the quarterback situation? What does the depth chart look like, and who's potentially the front runner at this point?
Well, I think it's a three-man race, Lance. I mean, I don't think anybody separated themselves based on the OTAs and minicamp. They got equal reps. The Bills made sure that Taylor and Castle and Manuel got the equal number of reps with the first team, and they're determined to go to training camp and make a pretty even competition. Rex Ryan has said that a couple of weeks into preseason, he expects to have an answer. No one, as I said, distinguished themselves or separated themselves based on what we saw in the OTAs and the mini camps, so it remains open. The depth chart looks like a three-way race, I think, I think for the long-term future of the franchise, it would be great if E.J. Manuel were the guy, just because they invested a first-round draft pick in him. He's only got 14 NFL starts, still working on his rookie contract. I think there are a lot of reasons why many people are hoping that it's E.J., but they're not going to hand it to him. I think they want to see if he can earn the job during training camp this year.
You know, what I find interesting is typically, you look across the landscape of the NFL and typically a new head coach comes in, he brings in an offensive coordinator, a quarterback coach, and then they go out and they draft their quarterback of the future, and it's kind of like this four-man team, right? Rex is coming into a situation where he's not responsible for any of these quarterbacks, honestly, that are on this roster. I think you make a really interesting point in regard to E.J. Manuel. He's the quarterback that was drafted from the past regime. So I kind of feel like there's no politics that are going to be played here with this quarterback competition. Are you feeling that?
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I think they're open-minded about the competition and who could come out on top. I think that's, given the situation they're in, it's probably the best approach. I mean, Rex Ryan has said publicly, look, in a perfect world, we'd have our quarterback, we'd be settled on him, we'd be moving forward, but it's a less than perfect situation. I think they're open-minded about the competition and determined to find the best guy. And really their approach, just 2 years removed from drafting E.J. Manuel in the first round, their approach has been, let's get better around everywhere else. They did not have a first-round draft pick, so they didn't have an opportunity this year to get another first-round quarterback. So they've tried to do everything they can around the quarterback to help him succeed, including maintaining their strong defense, getting the running game healthier, much healthier than it was a year ago, and adding some offensive weapons around the quarterback. And it remains to be seen how successful that will be.
And one of the reasons why expectations are higher in Buffalo this season, John, is, as you alluded to, they have surrounded the quarterback position with a wealth of talent, whether it be a running back, wide receiver, and tight end specifically. Anita mentioned Rex Ryan and what he did with respect to the Jets, and if you look at how the Jets operated with their quarterbacks, it was somewhat of a game of musical chairs, where it was one guy one week, then they gave the opportunity to another player. Even back in Buffalo over the last few seasons, John, and you know this better than anybody, you know, there hasn't been a great deal of stability under center. With that being said, how important is it for somebody to emerge out of training camp as opposed to perhaps playing a game of musical chairs, which has been the script over the last few seasons?
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to play musical chairs at quarterback. They want to find the guy. I think last year's coaching staff, Doug Marrone in particular, was determined to, he felt pressure to win right away last year. And so four games into the season, Manuel started the first four, won two, lost two, had a really kind of a poor performance at Houston, and he pulled the plug on him, and Manuel never got back on the field the rest of the year. I think that was premature looking back on it. I think this coaching staff in its first year will commit to a quarterback a couple of weeks into training camp, probably a couple of weeks into preseason anyway, and most likely stay with them for a much longer period. Not that they're going to, you know, go down with the ship, but I think they will find the guy that they believe they can win with and stay with him for as long as they can while continuing to believe they can win with him. So I don't think, you know, I think ideally they would identify some. Ideally someone would play well in preseason and identify themselves as the top candidate, and they'd go with him and stay with him for the whole year.
All right, well, let's talk about the weapons that whoever the quarterback might be at regular season game one, starting for the Bills, who they have to work with. You know, I find Sammy Watkins very interesting. Obviously, the number one wide receiver taken off the board, Odell Beckham Jr. kind of outshined everyone. But I feel like last year was the year of the rookie wide receivers. Interested to see how Sammy Watkins is going to take a step forward. I'm sure he wants to be known as the best wide receiver coming out of that draft class. But also, you add the addition of Percy Harvin, who I was reading, he wants to be known as a legitimate wide receiver. He doesn't want to be that slash player anymore. I think with the addition of Percy Harvin, and I know we've heard a lot about him just being a bad egg in the locker room. Hopefully that's behind him. Playing for Rex and now in Buffalo. But that 1-2 punch, that combination of Watkins and Percy Harvin, I think is going to be a big threat for a lot of secondaries in the NFL. What are your expectations for Watkins this year?
Well, I think I'm anticipating he'll have a good year. He had a pretty good rookie year with limited quarterbacking last year. Kyle Orton was his quarterback most of the season. Watkins got banged up a little bit, had some rib issues early on that hampered him, but still wound up with 65 catches and some spectacular plays, and I think the Bills are looking for more of the same. They believe they have a unique talent, a generational talent in Sammy Watkins. That's why they, you know, made the big move up and traded away this year's first rounder to move up to get Sammy Watkins. So I think in the passing game he will remain the focal point. Harvin is a big addition. You're right about how they're determined to make him into a complete wide receiver while hopefully maintaining some of his game-breaking abilities on special teams and in other facets of the offense. They have a really good third-year wide receiver, Robert Woods, a former second-round pick out of USC, who I think they expect big things from. They have some talent at the receiver spot. Chris Hogan, a New Jersey native, had a big year last year, and he's going to compete hard, I think, to maintain his position as the slot receiver. So they have a lot of talent at wide receiver, and Watkins is the leader of the class, and with his 65 catches last year, I think they're looking for more this year. Even in a run-oriented offense, I think they're hoping they can get Watkins up around 80 or 85 catches this year and have him make some big plays.
Talking with John Murphy, radio play-by-play announcer for the Buffalo Bills, as we are previewing some of the Giants' upcoming matchups during the regular season. You just touched on the running game, John, and if you look at the numbers last season, it wasn't necessarily very high on the rankings as a result of the inconsistent play from the offensive line, and that may be obviously putting it a little politely. How does the offensive line look like right now? They brought in Richie Incognito. Some guys are at least healthy who are dealing with some injuries. What are your expectations from this group, and how much is that really ultimately going to set the tone for the running game this season?
Well, I think the goal is, and especially with Greg Roman as the offensive coordinator, the goal is to get back to where they were a couple of years ago in the running game. I believe they were the fourth or maybe the eighth ranked rushing attack in 2013. They dropped down to 25th last year. They believe they have the talent at the running back spot, especially with the addition of LeSean McCoy. They believe they have the talent to be much better than they were a year ago. And, yeah, the offensive line, that's the key. Incognito comes in. He's done a pretty good job of taking over at one guard spot. They drafted John Miller out of Louisville in the third round. He was plugged right into the starting lineup in the first minicamp he attended, and it doesn't look like he's coming out. They have Eric Wood back at center. They have a pretty good young pro in Cordy Glenn at left tackle. And there's kind of a battle shaping up between last year's incumbent, a seventh-round pick a year ago, Chantrell Henderson, and a former second-round pick, Cyrus Quanjo, at the right tackle spot. So I think they believe they've upgraded the talent level on the offensive line. I think they believe that that's really the key to their success offensively is the run game, especially with the limitations they may have at quarterback. And O-line has been a really big focus for the Bills this offseason.
Let's talk about the running back situation for a hot second. And LeSean McCoy, I mean, he goes from Chip Kelly's system in Philadelphia to obviously this one with the Buffalo Bills. If you can kind of give us an idea of how each system is different and how this system might benefit LeSean McCoy in the season you're expecting him to have.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not innately familiar with Chip Kelly's offense, but I know Greg Roman is a much more power-oriented running attack, and I think there are going to be times when, a lot of times I would think, when they're going to have LeSean McCoy running behind a fullback, which is not something that he saw a lot of, I think, in the last few years at Philadelphia. I think, he is the so-called bell cow running back they have. He's going to get a lot of work. He's used to a heavy workload, and the Bills are going to continue to give him the carries this year. And I think they look for McCoy to be a factor in the passing game as well. So they have LeSean McCoy. They have Fred Jackson, 34-year-old Fred Jackson, coming back for another year. He's been extremely productive in his last 5 to 10 years, or 5 or 6 or 7 years in the NFL. They have a young guy, Carlos Williams, a fifth-round pick, who they got out of FSU, who looked really good in the OTAs and the minicamp. And I think he will get some playing time, along with a couple of guys coming back for a second year, Bryce Brown and Booby Dixon. So they have the horses back there. As we talked about a minute ago, they have sort of a rebuilt offensive line. And I think the focus will be on ground and pound, the old Rex Ryan philosophy. And I think in Greg Roman, they have a guy who will subscribe to that and try to run the ball as much as they can and run the ball effectively as much as they can.
One of the other philosophies that they have subscribed to over the last few seasons has been to win the battle in the trenches on defense, John. And you look at what Jim Schwartz did last season, an admirable job. They were a top 10 defense, number one in sacks, very good against the run and the pass. Now that Rex Ryan is coming in, a new defensive coordinator, how many changes do you anticipate in terms of scheme, in terms of personnel, depth chart, that they're going to implement with respect to this defense?
Oh, I think there'll be changes for sure. I mean, Ryan's defense, as you know, is sort of based on a 3-4 front. They won't be exclusively 3-4, but they'll kind of line up that way, I think, very often. Last year, Jim Schwartz was more of a 4-3 front. In essence, the Bills are kind of going back to where they were under Mike Patton a couple years ago. Again, a defense based on 3-4 philosophy and 3-4 approach. I don't think, nobody really plays the old-fashioned 3-4 defense anymore. And I don't think they're going to play the same defense that Mike Patton played. But I think the principles will be the same. I think they'll be much more of an attacking defense than they were a year ago. And they have the people to do it. I mean, they have an outstanding front line defensively with Mario Williams and Kyle Williams, Marcel Darius, and Jerry Hughes coming off the edge. Some pretty good depth there. They have some linebacking talent, young linebacking talent. Preston Brown comes back for a second year. Nigel Bradham, a young player from FSU, is back again. And I think they have the corners to play the kind of defense Rex Ryan wants. They have a good, strong, solid manned coverage guys. Stephon Gilmore, former first-round pick, Leotis McKelvin. They have, I think, an emerging star in safety, Aaron Williams. I think on defense, they probably have about as much talent as anybody in the league. I'd put them right alongside the Seattle Seahawks defensive talent. And I think given Rex Ryan's coaching expertise on that side of the ball, this defense actually could be better than they were last year, and they were very good last year.
I find it interesting. When Rex left New York, he did have an opportunity to go to the Atlanta Falcons. And talking to a number of the insiders that we know in the landscape of the NFL, really thought that he would go to Atlanta because one thing Rex did not have success with in New York was a quarterback. And if he went to Atlanta, then he knows that he really wouldn't have to focus so much time on the offense because he has Matt Ryan and arguably two of the best wide receivers in the NFL, and hopefully he can focus in on the defense, bring some talent there. But he decided on the Buffalo Bills, where it's kind of, in some regards, the same situation as we've been talking about the quarterback. But, man, this defense is just so amazing. And with the addition of somebody who's as talented and creative as Rex Ryan, I think his thought process is defense wins championships. I think we can get by with an average to below average quarterback and just hopefully become the best defense in the NFL. So with that being said, I mean, what are the chances that this defense surpasses the Seattle Seahawks as the best defense in the NFL in 2015?
Yeah, I think there's a chance. I really do, given the talent they have, given Rex Ryan's philosophy, given the coaching talent that he brought with him from New York. I mean, when you talk about his decision-making back in January when he took the job here in Buffalo, and he certainly would have had other offers, I think it was twofold. I think the defensive talent you mentioned was probably a big factor in the decision. I think the new ownership here, the Pegulas, Terry and Kim Pegula, impressed him with their commitment to winning and their commitment to provide the resources to winning, which includes hiring coaches, you know, spending enough money to get Greg Roman to come here and adding some of the best coaches in the game on both sides of the ball, letting Rex bring the guys he's comfortable with up with him from New York to coach on the defensive side of the ball, and some of the offensive coaches too, Sanjay Lal, a wide receiver. So, yeah, I think it was a commitment by the owners, the financial commitment they demonstrated both to Rex and to his staff. I think it was I think the Bills have a new approach under this ownership where they're aggressive. Our young general manager up here, Doug Whaley, obviously made the Watkins trade a couple of years ago. They went out this year and spent money in free agency for people like Harvin and made the trade for McCoy and renegotiated his contract. And so I think Rex caught on to the fact that they're ready to spend money here. They're ready to make a big move, and he wanted to be part of it.
Talking with Bills radio play-by-play announcer John Murphy. John, when you look at this defense, and you touched on that, there's a great deal of depth, there's a number of playmakers, but perhaps unlike the offense, you know, the average NFL fan, Giants fans included, may not take notice of some of the individuals who are not necessarily household names. You mentioned the Mario Williams, the Kyle Williams of the world. Jerry Hughes had a very productive season. If you were to pinpoint one player on defense this year that doesn't get enough credit, that could become a household name or make a name for himself, who would that be on this Bills defense?
I mean, there's a couple of candidates for that. As I mentioned, Aaron Williams, I think, is a fine young safety, a former University of Texas star who came in as a second rounder a couple of years ago and played cornerback. And 2 years ago, the Bills switched him to safety, and he's really just taken to it. I think he has, in this defense, he has the potential to come up with some big numbers of interceptions. And I think Aaron Williams is a guy to keep an eye on. Up front, I mean, Marcell Dareus has been to three consecutive Pro Bowls, so it's hard to think of him as being overlooked, but see a household name around the NFL? Probably not. But when you talk to personnel people around the league, they'll tell you that Dareus is as talented as they come up front in terms of athleticism and quickness in a 325, 330-pound package. I think Dareus is, really, he and Dominick Sue, for my money, are probably the best two interior linemen in the NFL. So those, and even, you know, a couple of young linebackers, and we're talking about under-the-radar players. I think Nigel Bradham had a sensational year for the Bills at outside linebacker last year. And Preston Brown had a great rookie year, a former third-round pick from Louisville who played every snap defensively for the Bills last season. So those would be some of the guys who, are they going to be household names? I don't know, but I think they would, they're definitely under-the-radar guys who personnel people know a lot about in terms of guys who are really on the rise defensively.
Hey, before we let you go, I'd like to get your thoughts on the division as a whole. And looking at the landscape around the NFL, this is a division that I'm really intrigued by this season. The Dolphins have gotten better. With the addition of Rex Ryan to that Bills defense, I think the Bills have gotten better. There's a chance that Tom Brady might be suspended 4 games. That kind of helps the other teams in the division. And you got to like what the Miami Dolphins have done, especially on the defensive side of the ball, bringing in Sue. So I think it's going to be probably one of the most competitive years. How do you think it plays out? How many teams do you anticipate making it to the playoffs in this division? How competitive do you think it's going to be?
Oh, I think it'll be real competitive. The Bills split their series with the Patriots last year. The Bills finished with 9 wins and second in the division. The win they had over New England was their regular season finale when the Patriots pulled their starters essentially at halftime. But they split their series with the Patriots. They swept the Jets and split their series with the Dolphins last year. I think it's between the Bills and the Dolphins for who's going to challenge the Patriots. And I like the Bills' defense better than I like Miami's. I know Miami feels good about their offense and feels pretty good about Tannehill, a quarterback, but I think the Bills are probably more talented overall and maybe more motivated to, I don't know about motivation, that's not it, but just more positioned, better positioned to challenge the Patriots at this point. So I would look for, you know, and again, the Patriots, you know, you got to beat the champion, right? You got to knock out the champion, and they are the champs, the Super Bowl champs this year. They will miss Brady if he's out for a couple of games, obviously. I think they've taken some hits in the secondary. They're kind of back, you know, at square one in their secondary as far as the talent level back there. But they have great coaching. They have the best quarterback in the league. And I would think, you know, you got to knock them off if you're going to make strides. But I would look for the Bills to maybe nip and tuck at the Patriots' heels all season.
Well, certainly should be an interesting division. Week 4, Bills and the Giants in Buffalo. John, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Okay, thanks, guys.
You got it. John Murphy, radio play-by-play announcer for the Buffalo Bills, kind enough to give us a few minutes. As we mentioned, all throughout the course of this week, we'll be previewing a different Giants opponent as we take you across till Thursday. Now we're going to open up the phone lines at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat.
So the Giants, what's the date again? October 4th, right?
October 4th.
Correct. October 4th. So that's great. Because I'll tell you what, you have the schedule up. If you can, scroll down a little bit. I think it's going to be really, really difficult.
Well, this is the Bills schedule. You want the Bills schedule?
Yeah.
You want to look at it?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. I think it's going to be really, really difficult for teams to beat that Buffalo Bills defense, Lance, at home in Buffalo during the end of the year, of course, because of the cold weather and just how teams play under Rex Ryan. So that's the New York Jets. I'm trying to think of the other teams that they have at home. Dallas Cowboys, that bodes well. I think that's going to be a tough game for Dallas.
They're on the road for the majority of November and December. It's very interesting how their schedule is structured. I mean, they have Miami at home in week 9, and they have the Texans week 13, and they're not home until 16 and 17.
So I'd say the Texans on December 6th. I'd say Dallas on December 27th, and I'd say the Jets on January 3rd, especially that Jets game. You've got week 17, you've got Rex Ryan at home
that
with his Bills defense going up against. That is going to be a heavyweight bout. That's going to be a can't-miss game, I'll tell you that. So, Dallas, week 16. That bodes well. I think that bodes really well for Giants fans.
Well, if you look at the makeup of the NFC East and the AFC East, because both of those divisions are going up against one another, you have a number of good offenses and you have a number of good defenses. So who's going to win out? Is it going to be stellar defense? Is it going to be stellar offense? I think that's the big storyline in these interconference matchups this season. But what jumps out to me, and John Murphy emphasized it, the Buffalo Bills defense could arguably be the best defense in the National Football League when the 2015 season wraps up. I mean, that's how balanced this squad is. They have an experienced secondary, which I think has come a long way. You know, a few years ago, that was an inexperienced secondary. He mentioned Aaron Williams, one of their safeties, but even their corners have a great deal of potential to really even further break out this season. And that front seven, I mean, they had the top ranking in terms of sacks last season. They were great against the run. You do both of those things effectively, and we talk about this with respect to the Giants. What do the Giants need to do this season? They need to stop the run. Before you even talk about getting to the quarterback, stockpiling on the sacks, you have to be good against the run. And Buffalo put aside pressure on the quarterback, a very good run defense because of how their interior linemen play.
Absolutely. And then on the opposite side, you talk about you got to stop the run. I mean, we kind of touched on the running backs for Buffalo. Intriguing for me to see how LeSean McCoy is going to fit and play in that system. I thought it was interesting. He said he's not used to running with a fullback kind of making the way for him. I think that's going to be a positive for LeSean McCoy. But you look at the Fred Jackson, Booby Dixon, Bryce Brown is a guy who's kind of, yes, he's had some peaks and valleys, but when he's peaked, especially when he played for the Philadelphia Eagles, he looked quite good. So, you know, this is a backfield that has some depth and some talent.
Well, I think they have depth all around. I'd go even beyond the backfield. I think wide receivers, You know, even when you look at the fourth or fifth wide receiver, Marquise Goodwin, who is trying to compete for the Olympics. I mean, he's a very athletic guy who's trying to solidify a roster spot. They had Chris Hogan last year, the guy known as 7-11. You know, they don't just go three deep in terms of wide receivers. And you brought up the fullback, Jerome Felton, a guy who's been with the Vikings, helping their run game flourish. So, you know, all across the board here, the Bills certainly have the offensive weapons. But as we talk about with so many teams, quarterback play is going to be the end-all, be-all when it comes to how successful the Buffalo Bills will be in terms of their offensive production. Let's head to the phone lines here as we will take your calls. We'll get your tweets going throughout the remainder of the show. Christian in New York starts us off here on a Monday. Christian, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, John and Anita?
That's Lance and Anita, but we're doing well. How's everything?
Oh, man.
You and John are starting Monday to sound alike.
Apparently, yeah.
That's what...
Would it be the first time? So what do you have for us, Christian?
Well, I want to talk a little about Odell Beckham's year if Victor Cruz never got injured. He might not have 91 catches, 1,300 yards, and 12 touchdowns, but I really think he would have stolen the number one receiver job from Cruz within a couple of weeks, and really just because he's normally a superior athlete, whoever he's lined up against or whoever he's competing with for a job.
Well, I mean, there's no argument that even if Victor Cruz was fully healthy last season, I'm sure Odell Beckham would continue to put up the numbers he did. But, you know, when we start to classify the number one wide receiver, the number two wide receiver, to me, I don't really think there's that much of a distinguish anymore when you look across the NFL landscape, because at the end of the day, a lot of teams put out three to four wide receivers quite often, and corners move from side to side. You know, corners in the NFL are not strictly playing one side of the football field. So as a result, you know, it's hard to classify a number one guy and a number two guy, especially when you're seeing a lot of teams that have multi to three types of 1,000-yard receivers. And when you get into that conversation, sometimes the line is very blurry between the number and the number two wide receiver.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know if Victor Cruz would have stayed healthy. I'd look at them as like a 1A and a 1B.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I can't honestly sit here and say that because a lot of what we saw from Odell Beckham Jr. just happened to be with the sure fact that there was really nobody else for Eli Manning to throw the ball to. I mean, he was his go-to, and he was creating that space and that separation, and there were so many injuries, and so I'm praying that Victor Cruz is healthy, that at least we get back an 85% Victor Cruz and looking at a 1A and 1B. But what a great problem for a team to have, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But when I say number one, I'm just talking about who is clearly our most talented receiver. And also, the fact that teams didn't really respect Ruben at all shows that he was already getting extra attention. And he was still responding with excellent numbers. I mean, if you look at the Atlanta Falcons game, they started switching up the way they played defense in that second half when Odell was on the field the whole time. So nobody got caught off guard by him at all. They all knew he was the third-ranked receiver in the draft, and no one could do anything about him. He's an elite athlete.
Well, I would agree with you, Christian. I think you brought up a good point because a big part of the conversation about Odell Beckham this season, for everybody trying to speculate what the Giants are going to do on offense, is, Odell Beckham now has more attention coming his way. They're going to throw two or three corners, and you hit it right in the nose. Last season...
They already did that.
Correct. They did that. So I don't really think that things are going to drastically change. All it means is that there's going to probably be favorable opportunities for the other wide receivers that you were alluding to, the Ruben Randles, the Victor Cruzes, even Larry Donnell at tight end, and they're going to have to take advantage of some of those favorable matchups because I think still a great deal of attention is going to go the way of Odell Beckham.
Absolutely. And let me just give you like a ballpark statistic hypothetical for you. I think he would have got around 60 to 70 catches still. I think he would have had around the same amount of touchdowns because they still would have had to worry about Cruz. And I think he could have gotten around 800 yards.
You're talking about Odell Beckham?
I'm talking about if Odell Beckham starting week five, if Victor Cruz never got hurt, I think he still could have got 800 yards, around the same amount of touchdowns, and probably around 60 to 70 catches.
Well, I mean, listen, in terms of speculation, it's very well possible, Christian, and appreciate the phone call. I mean, the past is the past. So to sit here and try to determine, you know, who would have gotten what if everybody was fully healthy, I think that the numbers shouldn't fall off that much for Odell Beckham if he can continue to produce at the level he has. Is he going to get perhaps 1,300 receiving yards and 91 receptions? You know, I'm sure Victor Cruz is going to take away some of those targets, Anita, so you have to at least take that into consideration.
Victor Cruz and Shane Vereen.
And Shane Vereen, but I still think Odell Beckham's capable of getting about 1,000 to 1,100 receiving yards. You can pretty much pencil him in for that.
If I know it's a big if Victor Cruz is at least 85%, I think the Giants could possibly have two wide receivers.
Absolutely.
That will put up over 1,000 yards. Quick note here, I know we're kind of coming off the women's USA soccer team winning the World Cup, and there's been a lot of talk about soccer and why isn't the men's soccer team as good, let's say, in their respective gender competition. And a big reason is because you've got some of the best athletes, male athletes, who are playing other sports like football, like basketball, like baseball. Those other sports really aren't available for women to excel and exceed in a professional realm. It's only tennis, golf, soccer, WNBA, you know. But anyway, where I'm going with this is, believe it or not, Odell Beckham Jr., his best sport is soccer. And he feels he would probably be an even better soccer player than an NFL player. The only reason that he did not pursue soccer is because he loves his family too much and he doesn't want to live in Europe. He didn't want to live across the pond. How
makes
about
sense.
That?
Obviously, more opportunities overseas.
So I mean, you brought up Odell Beckham Jr. and I just thought it's an interesting little nugget for folks out there. I mean, we've seen him, you know, he's just, you know, slamming basketballs, pitching softballs, doing this. He's a phenomenal athlete. We know that. But just a little added nugget, football's not even his best sport. Soccer is his best sport. How crazy is that?
Based on all the videos, it wouldn't surprise me if you would have said baseball was his best sport, too. I think he can make a case for just about any sport at this point. Micah is in Tennessee. Micah, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
How we doing, Micah?
I have a question about Jason Pierre-Paul. If he doesn't play the first couple of weeks, which he probably won't, who's going to be at that spot? Do you have DeMontre Moore? I mean, can you trust him on Trey Moore to take that over?
I think it's going to be my opinion, don't know anything here, but I think it's going to be a competition. I think it's going to be a competition. And also, it's something that I talked about with Paul Dottino last week, and that is, you know, Spags could – there's all the defensive ends that are going to be competing for that position kind of do things differently, some better than others in regard to getting after the quarterback or stopping the run. So it could be a situation where Spags kind of uses guys based on their strengths. So on first down, maybe he puts a defensive end in there that's better stopping the run as opposed to a defensive end on third down who's better at getting after the quarterback. So it could be a situational thing in regard to how Spags uses a lot of these guys. But you got to think errors. You've got to think win. You got to think more. You got to think, I can't wait to see 00. I think now this opens up an opportunity for 00 to kind of prove his worth and his draft value and see if maybe he wins the position because he looks the part, that's for sure.
I wouldn't overlook George Selvey, too, because he's an established veteran. I think he gets lost in the mix, too. I think to answer your question, Micah, you know, as Anita mentioned, there's a number of other viable candidates, and if you're concerned about perhaps not giving the opportunity to somebody who's maybe unpolished or still young and maturing as an individual, between Robert Ayers and George Selvey, you have two established veterans who can easily be thrown into his spot in the event that he's not ready to go.
Okay. And I have a non-football question. It's a Knicks question. What do you think about Kristaps Porzingis and how he played his first summer league game?
Yeah, 12 points? I want to say
had
that
a few rebounds, blocks.
Yeah, I want to say that it sounds like he did pretty well. I hosted my show with Om Young-Minsook yesterday, and Om said that he looked good, but keep in mind, he's just not going to be able to bang like that in the paint against NBA players. He's still, as great as he looks in Las Vegas, which is very hopeful, this young man is still a project, and you're looking at a 2 or 3 year project. To think that he's going to average 12 points per game for the Knicks this coming season is unrealistic. That's what Om said.
Micah, appreciate the phone call. He's got to develop his body. I mean, that's the key, especially become
like he's
a more well-rounded defensive
player. He's like 195 soaking wet. I'm kidding. I want to say he's like 200. They want to see him get up to like 230 or something like that.
Which is understandable that he's not fully mature. He's a young kid, so
right.
Obviously.
What is he, 19?
Yeah, I mean, look at what Kevin Garnett came in, and then see how he developed, and Kobe Bryant too. You don't keep the same framework as you develop.
Also, I heard that Jerron Grant actually looked quite good. I mean, like he's jumping out of the roof. Lost a little control when he went up, but you know, I there's so much focus on Porzingis that I think a lot of people are kind of forgetting that Grant was also drafted, and I think there's some high expectations for him this season.
No, he's more polished because he played obviously a few years at Notre Dame. Let's head back to the phone lines. Big Ed is in Maryland. Big Ed, what's happening?
Hey, it's Big Lance. And Mrs. Big Alina. I mean, Anita.
Do not use the word big. You do not want to use
well,
the word big.
Well, that's his MO, though. He has big in front of everything.
When referring to a female, even if she is big.
No, big is a legendary, baby. Not big as your size.
That's sweet.
Has nothing to do with it.
That's sweet.
It's cleared
Thank
by Big Ed. Big Ed's making it known. It's nothing to do with the size.
Okay.
It's all about everything else. Okay.
So what do you got for
What's
us,
up,
Big
guys?
Ed?
What's you happening? Enjoying the summer? You joined the summer league?
Yeah, absolutely. So what's on your mind, Tim?
All right, good. Oh, not too much. Just sharing my views real quick. I wish we can get OC back because he's the best player.
You know what?
With talent, tenacity, and everything that runs and stacks defense the best.
It's funny.
That's what would make us go right back.
I ran into OC. On Friday,
uh-huh.
I ran into OC on Friday, and I said, "Hey, keep your phone closed." And
yes.
And you know, look, he kind of smiled.
Get out of Atlanta, get your butt to the city, and let's go win number five. Stop playing.
I absolutely adore OC. I think he's hands down one of my favorite players that played here. I just realistically. You know, what can you expect from him at this stage in game in his career? I think more of a role player than anything else.
So what? It doesn't matter if he's coming off a third down rush. It doesn't matter. Give him an incentive bonus. Make him, like, if he gets, like, 20-plus sacks or breaks Raham's record, that'd be great. And then let's go. We need that to go back. That's the only way we go back. It doesn't matter if the offense scores 50 points. Giants history, and we love our Giants. Defense has to stop. Defense stops, we win. Period.
Well, Big Ed, I think you also need to look at the current roster right now and some of the young guys that they brought in that they want to give opportunities and some of the established veterans. And probably going to turn to players who have been working here in OTAs and minicamp, even hypothetically, if we were to use your example, and they did perhaps in the middle of training camp bring in somebody that's familiar with Spags' system, that doesn't mean that player is automatically going to be inserted into the starting lineup and be in the mix. So I think right now they're invested in the players that have been working throughout the offseason program, and those are the guys that are going to have to step up, assuming those opportunities are presented their way.
Absolutely. Yeah, you already know it's going to be competition. Nobody's going to determine who's going to get where or what.
But that's a great thing, and that's a good thing, Big Ed.
That's the best part.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Away from training camp. Oh my
Correct.
God!
He's having a whole show by himself there, Big Ed. When you look at the fact that there's a lot of jobs that are still up for grabs, that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know, as you just touched on, because that means that guys are going to stay hungry throughout training camp, and they're going to compete with one another and let the best man win. I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing.
Nope, it can be a great thing. You got to may the best man win. That's what it's about. It's competition at its finest.
Absolutely.
Proven to be. I'm even willing to throw myself into it.
Well,
hey,
listen,
if
get
I can
those
do it,
pads on, get those shorts and the jerseys rolling, Big Ed. Come
you
up from Maryland,
big,
and we'll put in a good word.
Receiver, right? They
Say
got
that
reach
again?
And can grab everything out the air, right? We can do that, right?
So you're a wide receiver? Is that what your scouting report is? That's what you're alluding to?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Our
scouting report.
Well, but keep in mind, Big Ed.
Got Hall of Fame hands.
Big Ed.
I don't drop much of anything,
and I'm not
afraid to go across the middle.
If you want to make this team, though, I don't know if wide receiver is your best opportunity. There's a lot of depth there. You may need to work on your versatility. You may need to find another position, maybe where the depth chart isn't as thick. Wide receiver, there's a lot of guys. I don't know about your chances there.
Hey, do you have a 6'4" wide receiver that is not afraid to go across the middle and can go deep?
Well, time will tell whether or not somebody who can showcase that versatility. But I still like the chances of the guys that are suited up, Big Ed. Listen, it was good talking with you. We'll continue to chat with you throughout the course of the summer. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's head back to the phone lines. Abdul is in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's happening?
Abdul, hey, guys. I'm sorry if my comments are a little dated. I was up camping all last week in the North Woods of Minnesota, so I was off the grid. But when I first heard about JPP's injury, first I was like, I hope the football came secondary. And once football came into focus, I realized that that's probably the one area that we could afford to lose a player because we have so much depth. I think I just spoke about that a few phone calls ago. We have so many players that have talent on this defensive line, like Ayers and Selvies and Odigizua, Jenkins, I think his name is. You know, we have a lot of players that, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul has been overrated for a while. He hasn't been that same player that he had 16.5 sacks for a long while. I think he's a very good run stopper and an overrated pass rusher. I don't think he's as good as everyone thinks he is, and I'm kind of glad the Giants didn't sign him to a long-term contract because he's not worth that much money. You know, he's really good. I think he makes us a better team, but he's not like an impact, you know, end. I think we have other players that can do what he does and for cheaper.
I will say this. I was and still am really excited to see the JPP this year because there's something about a player playing in a contract year wanting a more lengthy, lucrative deal as opposed to being tagged. And as we know, the Giants could tag him again.
But wasn't last year a contract year, too?
In 2016. Yeah, but, I mean, listen, if he's playing...
Three sacks coming up until the last six games.
He dealt with some injuries last year, but you know there's something players don't want to be tagged twice, so you know there is definitely added motivation there, and I just you know prior to unfortunately this incident happening, he was posting video on Vine in regard to how he was training hard. He was so excited to come in and play, and I mean, Lance, I don't know about you, but I was really excited, and I had some really hefty expectations for JPP this season. Now, unfortunately, we just don't know what the status is or when he'll be able to suit up and play, and hopefully it will be sooner than later. But, you know, I was really excited to see what he was going to bring to the table this year.
Well, I'm excited to see what the defensive line as a whole can do. Abdul, to not meaning to cut you off, I'll let you continue, but you know, with respect to your point about how you know you think there's enough depth on this team to make up for a loss of JPP, I'm not going to disagree with those sentiments, but I wouldn't necessarily categorize JPP's injury as a blessing in disguise, where all of a sudden you're going to have another JPP in the fold and you're going to throw him right in and get that type of production. Sacks are going to fluctuate, and I think this is where a lot of fans don't understand. Just because a guy's got 15 sacks on another team doesn't mean that all of a sudden, you know, everybody else on your team who's not putting up those numbers is not consistent or is not good. Sacks are very erratic. They come and go. So, you know, you have to put that aside when you evaluate JPP. You did allude to the fact that he's very good at stopping the run, and I don't think he gets enough credit for that. And what happens is when you have a player who's consistent in stopping the run, that's going to also open up opportunities for other players on the defensive line to get to the quarterback. And he's an attention grabber. So while he may not get you 5 sacks a game, and the numbers may not jump off the page all the time, his presence does make a difference, and you need that on your team. So it's a significant loss, and I'm not going to sit here and give you a timetable because we don't know anything at this point. But, you know, they have depth. He still, though, is a key piece of that depth, and you don't want to lose a player like that.
I never would have said it. I never said it was a blessing in disguise.
No, I know. I'm taking your sentiments and I'm tweaking the words. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. But the way you're breaking it down is as if, well, JPP's hurt. There's 5 or 6 guys here that everybody will plug in and everything's going to be fine. And it's not going to be that impactful of a loss. At least that was my takeaway from your words.
And you're right. That's what I'm saying. It's not as big of a loss as it would be, say, another tackle going down or losing a cornerback. I'm saying at the way the Giants are constructed, it's not as big of a loss as it would be somewhere else. That's my point. And my second point is that I'm surprised people aren't making a big enough stink about Greg Hardy. You know, I just got back on Friday and I saw that his his suspension was knocked down from 10 to 4. And the guy said what he did was despicable. He should be in jail, but 10 is too much. Because of the past, no one ever got 10 games from before.
Well, this is...
If you read the report, this guy should be in jail.
Yeah, well,
right?
I mean,
he really shouldn't, and you got lucky.
Just to clarify, I made a big stink of it yesterday. That's number one.
Okay.
Number two. Unfortunately, the reason this arbitrator came up with the decision to knock it down six games is because of the two-game suspension that Ray Rice was given prior, of course, to the world watching the video that the horrendous.
That makes no sense.
Well,
to
let me
just
finish. Okay, I know, but
let me
finish because there's people listening that you're obviously very aware of what has happened, but there's people listening who I don't think have. So because Ray Rice was given a two-game suspension, and of course that suspension was handed down before the video was released in regard to what actually took place in the elevator, since then Greg Hardy was given a 10-game suspension, then Roger Goodell created a committee and added some women to that committee, and they said any player who's been involved with domestic abuse should get six games. So what that arbitrator said was, well, Ray Rice only got two. I know this committee is saying six, so let's just split it in the middle and let's give him four. It's not right, and I did really put up a big stink about it yesterday, but I'm just explaining why and how Henderson came down to the four-game suspension. It's not right. I totally disagree with it, but that's how he came down with it.
Well, I hear you, but as I said, I was literally, my jaw dropped when I heard his logic, because it's so tone deaf and it just so goes against what, you know, this, if you have a sister, a wife, anyone, and you see what Greg Hardy did and the fact that he's playing on Sunday. And also, it makes me so proud to be a Giant and not a Cowboys fan, because I don't think the Mars or Tisch would ever sign this guy. And I couldn't imagine being a female Cowboys fan and trying to root for this team, seeing this guy playing on the field.
All right, Abdul.
Anyway,
appreciate the phone call.
I'm off my soapbox, and I can't wait for Giants football to start.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Just to make a comment here, because he's talking about fans. Emory University did a study, put out a report in regard to the best fans in the NFL. And they ranked all 32. They took like 15 years of stats and information and tickets and all kinds
of stuff.
Attendance
and so forth.
So the Dallas Cowboys, number one. Patriots, number two. The Giants, congratulations, Giants fans. You guys finished number three overall out of 32 teams in the NFL. The Jets came in at fifth. A big surprise with the Seattle Seahawks and the 12th man came in 26th. That's kind of surprising to me. And, of course, my hometown, the Miami Dolphin fans, came in dead last at 32. So, but anyway, big shout-out to Giants fans. I mean, just to be in the top five, let alone be number three overall in this study, I think speaks volumes. So congratulations.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Lance Meadow, Anita Marks with you here on Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Let's head back to the lines. Justin is in New Jersey. Justin, what's happening?
Oh, hi. I want to know, like, I've been a fan since, like, 2004, and that's when I started really getting into football. I'm also a Browns fan, too. So I'm thinking about both offensive lines for both teams, and I'm worried about both teams stopping the run because both teams have great secondaries, but I'm worried about the run game.
Well, the Giants did struggle in stopping the run last season. That's been well documented, Justin. In terms of the personnel that's in place right now, Jonathan Hankins had a career year last year. He's a guy that's going to fill the gaps. They brought in Kenrick Ellis, who's also known for stopping the run. So there have been some changes to the depth chart that I think is going to bode well for the Giants. And obviously the linebackers are very important in helping to stop the run. If John Beeson can stay healthy, you know, that is going to help that cause. And you look at some of the other linebackers that they brought into the mix. Devon Kennard is extremely versatile. He's a guy that can cover side to side. He could also be used as part of the blitz packages. So I think that the Giants have addressed that area by moving personnel around, getting guys healthy, and bringing in some new free agents. If everything clicks, they should be in much better shape to stop the run, which is what you were pointing out.
Yeah, but I thought first pick or second pick in the draft should have been at least a defensive tackle, because like a Danny Shelton or one of those guys, because like they were younger, it's much more cost would be less on the salary cap, and you'd be able to develop them into a great player in the league.
Well, keep this in mind. If you look at the early picks for the Giants this year, Justin, Landon Collins was in need because they have a group of safeties that are very young and inexperienced. So you needed to address that need, too. Remember, the draft is not just about one position. It's about making sure that you have a varied draft.
Hold on, Justin. Safety, no matter what.
Okay, Justin, just hold on. One second here. Hold on, one second.
Second round talent was going to.
Okay, no, I hear you, Justin.
One of those guys.
Dan, can you bring him down here for a second? I just want to establish one thing here. Some guys are on their own world. Then in the third round, they did address stopping the run and getting to the quarterback by bringing in Odighizuwa. So I think that to a certain degree, Justin, they did address your area of concern by, in the third round, bringing in a versatile defensive lineman who you can use inside and outside. I'll let you continue now, Justin. What else were you saying?
Also, about the offensive line, I'm not trying to say, the Giants did bad picks because I like some of the offensive line players, but I felt like, why didn't we get, an offensive line like the Dallas Cowboys, big boys who can mold people down, like Travis Kelce, Zach Martin, Doug Free, Ronald Larry, and Tyron Smith. Those are big dudes. They're over 300, 330, 320, and maybe one of them's 340, and they can maul people down. They can just, manhandle a defensive line.
Well, Justin, they did draft an offensive lineman in round one. Let's not forget about Eric Flowers, and he is a massive guy.
I know Eric Flowers. I was really happy about that pick, but I'm just saying, Justin Pugh, he doesn't seem like that big of a guy. Weston Richard, not that big of a guy. I'm not saying they're not bad. They're good players. I'm just saying, why don't we get, big guys who can mow people down?
Well, I think that the goal is for this unit to come together and appreciate the phone call. You know, sometimes you don't necessarily need to have a guy that's a specific size to automatically associate their ability to open up the run game and so forth. I think that there's a variety of different offensive linemen in the National Football League that are not necessarily, 6'7 and 400 pounds, and they have some versatility. And Justin Pugh is now moving to a different position, which he has not necessarily played all along with the New York Giants. So they have tried to get a little creative to find the perfect fit based on size, based on versatility. You know, Richburg played center all throughout college, so he's going back to his comfort zone. And he was very consistent when he was at Colorado State and helping them be good in terms of passing the football and running the football. So that's one of the reasons why I think a lot of people get caught up, this guy is height-wise and weight-wise, and he's not necessarily going to be good in terms of pass protection and run blocking, and that doesn't necessarily coincide when it comes to the NFL.
I'm just as equally excited to see how this offensive line is going to gel and come together. The only negative here is with the Greg Hardy decision. The Giants, with the 10-game suspension, Greg Hardy was going to miss both games. Because of this decision, he's only going to miss one. And so October 25th, Eric Flowers is going to have to go up against Greg Hardy. And
at the same time, though, they're going to be tested even before the Dallas game.
Yeah,
against other good pass rushers.
But, I mean, Greg Hardy's pretty –
Buffalo, San Francisco, Philadelphia.
I read a stat the other day that Greg Hardy has 20 – I want to say like over 20 – I want to say 28, but I'm not sure, 28 sacks in 32 games, where the Dallas Cowboys had less than that all season long last year.
Yeah, they were not very good at getting to the
all season
in terms
long.
Of sacks, at least.
Yes. Yeah. So, so what he's going to bring to the equation, so that's going to be a very tough matchup for Eric Flowers.
Yeah, you look at his numbers. He had 26 sacks,
October
25th. 12 and 13 combined, Brett Hardy. Just only one sack last season because he only played one game. 201-939-4513. Let's head back to the lines. Jerome is in Charlotte. Jerome, what's happening? Jerome, are you there? Jerome going once. Jerome is a man of very few words this afternoon. Let's see if Eric in North Dakota is talkative. Eric, what's happening?
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Good afternoon to you. How's everything?
Actually, I'm sorry. Good afternoon, Lance and Anita.
Same to you, Eric.
Hey,
what's happening?
All right. Well, two things. What do you see the tension of maybe getting a one-year contract to OC or Minora to the Giants, maybe to retire the Giant?
Well, I could certainly see that happening down the road. Teams have done that where they sign a player who obviously spent a great deal of their career so that he can hang up the jersey. As far as this season is concerned, about maybe bringing him back into the mix, I mean, that's a pure game of speculation. I think as a number of fans have called in, as Anita and I have voiced, there is a great deal of depth right now on the defensive line, Eric, and I don't know necessarily if priority number one is to bring in another defensive lineman. You know, the goal is to utilize the players that they have in the mix. Let's not forget, Robert Ayers you can use on the outside and the inside. The double O you can use on the outside and the inside. Colin Jenkins you can use on the outside and the inside. So, you know, they get dual play out of a number of sole defensive linemen because you can use them in a variety of different positions. That's what's versatile about this group.
Okay. And then my other question is, what about bringing Keith Booth? Remember him?
Kevin Booth.
Where's he playing now? Is he Oakland, right?
Kevin Booth is a free agent. The Raiders let him go, okay. I believe, if I'm correct. I'll confirm that, but I think he is out on the open market. You're talking about Kevin Booth, the offensive lineman. That's who you're referring to.
Yeah, he's a free agent right now. Can Giants sign another insurance policy on that, you know, just to get him in case something happens with the Giants?
Well, the Giants are capable of signing anybody they want, Eric, to answer your question. I mean, there's no limitations. He's a free agent and any other player that you throw out there, and I'm sure that the organization does its due diligence to see who can perhaps come in and help the team. But I always get back to this, and I say this season in and season out. Your first options are always your internal options. Players that have been with you during the offseason, understand the system, understand the scheme. And then I would say priority number two is in the event of an injury or you feel that the competition is not playing out, you then turn in the direction of maybe a veteran who's out there on the market. But, you know, right now, you know, there's a great deal of youth and there's a mix of veterans that they're trying to work out so that they can be productive in 2015.
Okay. All right, Anita, Lance, thank you. Have a good day.
Not a problem. Appreciate the phone call.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for waiting.
I'm having a blonde moment right now. I'm trying the offensive lineman whose knee is he's coming off of knee.
Jake Long.
My gut's kind of telling me that there's still an opportunity out there. I think his knee was just not ready to be signed, not only by the Giants but by any NFL team. So I still have a feeling that possibly Jake Long could still be in the mix for the Giants. I think
it's just
a time of a moment of, you know, time to heal and be able to pass that physical or feeling comfortable of signing a guy with hopes that his progress and his healing progress is looking good. So I haven't given hope on Jake Long yet.
Anything's possible. They've brought in other free agents who are veterans throughout the course of training camp. But when you're looking at the offensive line, you know, one of the things that we've been emphasizing over the course of the offseason, even the Giants coaching staff, when it spoke to the media, you know, finding those five players early in the process, getting them on the same page, and not moving people around. And if you can do that once training camp starts, to then bring somebody in, let's say 2 or 3 weeks in, and then all of a sudden revamp your game plan, you know, that all of a sudden eats into the continuity. So that would be my concern. If you're going to bring in a veteran, I guess is what I'm saying, Anita, I would do it early in the game, right as training camp starts, so that they can start with the rest of the crew as opposed to 3 weeks in where, you know, you've already established the roles of all your respective players.
Yeah, I think in a perfect world, that would be great.
Well, and the reason I bring that up is because of the injury issues that the Giants have had to deal with over the last few seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a player goes down in the preseason and then you got to move and mix and match. You know, one of the ways to avoid those things is if you have everybody on the same page day one at the start of training camp. And right now, knock on wood, everybody's healthy for the most part. Everybody's in shape. You know, Will Beattie, the injury, they've had enough time to digest that. Eric Flowers is now assuming the left tackle spot, and everybody else for the most part has stayed in their respective roles. You want to see that continue so that the group grows together as one unit. That's the only way they're going to continue to improve and get back to that unit that for years dominated in the trenches and was one of the top running teams as a whole. And that's exactly what they envisioned for 2015.
And I think you've got to be happy with, you know, what the Giants have done in regard to focusing on and spending draft picks, early on draft picks, bringing in talent like Pugh, like Flowers. I think the future could be bright. What are the expectations right away for this season? Well, we'll find out and sooner than later, that's for sure, because like we said when we started the show, I mean, training camp's going to be here before we know it. It's unbelievable how the summer has flown by.
Well, tomorrow we're going to be a month away from the first preseason game, to put things in perspective. August 14th at Cincinnati, that's the first preseason game, and we are exactly 2 months away from the regular season opener, September 13th. So before you know it, you're going to be crossing off just days, not months, not weeks, and the 2015 season will be underway. We appreciate everybody for watching and listening throughout the last 60 minutes. Thanks to everybody for their calls. That's actually, before we close up shop, Anita, we might as well take a look at Twitter. I know we haven't necessarily done a good job of throwing in a tweet or two, so I just want to get to one question or two. A number of people were weighing in on the defensive line. Here's a question from LaRocca the Great. Do you think a guy like Kerry Wynn will be used more on the outside as a defensive end or on the inside as a defensive tackle, especially with the JPP incident? He is versatile, Kerry Wynn, and I think he's one of the other players that you could throw into that Robert Ayers, Cullen Jenkins, 00 mold. I don't know immediately if they would throw him into a defensive tackle spot, because I think that there's other players probably ahead on the depth chart. But based on what Kerry Wynn did late last season, Anita, when there were a number of injuries, Robert Ayers went down. You look at that Jaguars game. You look at the Tennessee game. He is going to be very much in the mix in that defensive end rotation. And if he can piggyback off of what he did last season, I mean, the upside is very high for a player like that.
And I know it was just a small sample size, but during that veteran minicamp, Spags put Cullen Jenkins as a defensive end, you know, and
he's played both throughout his career.
Right. And, yep. And I mean, I think it's something that we touched on throughout the show, and a caller called in talking about the JPP injury. And I think he was right in this aspect, in that if this was an injury that happened to a player on the offensive line, yes, that would be a lot more. It's not to take away from what JPP means to this team or this defense or what an amazing athlete he is and contributor he is, but yes, because there's so much depth and versatility on this defensive line, it makes that hit less severe as if this was to happen to an offensive lineman, because the depth just isn't there. So yeah, I mean, the caller was right in that regard, but you know, it's unfortunately, it's a good problem to have for Spags.
One other question before we wrap up the show. Same thing at LaRocca the Great. Do you guys think Owa can get playing time at linebacker during his rookie year with all of the guys on the line and the uncertainty at linebacker? Haven't seen much experimentation with him at the linebacker position. Anything's possible as we see more and more workouts during training camp. You know, the main three linebackers that were utilized was John Beeson, JT Thomas, and Devon Kennard. And then obviously Jameel McClain, they used in just about every position. It's possible. I think right now that's a hypothetical. They envision him more on the line itself as a defensive end, a defensive tackle. But perhaps based on Spags' history, he always looks to get the most out of the defensive linemen as well as the linebackers. That will be something certainly interesting to watch moving forward. With that being said, appreciate all the tweets. Appreciate all the phone calls. Anita and I will be back with you tomorrow, noon Eastern. We'll continue to preview different Giants opponents each day, and we'll get to more of your calls.
I'm trying to think. Who do we have on tomorrow? I think we have San Francisco 49ers.
Correct. Yep.
So Ray Rotto out there in the Bay Area is going to join us for the show. So I'm excited to talk to him. I mean, my goodness, the San Francisco 49ers, so many players retiring.
A lot of defensive changes.
They lose Harbs. Harbs goes to Michigan. He's now the head coach of the Michigan Wolverines. So a lot of changes for the San Francisco 49ers. So excited to talk to him to kind of get a feel of, like, you know, what's the realistic expectations for this team.
So we'll preview the Niners, we'll get to your calls, we'll get to your tweets. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man, we need the work. Let's go.
Yeah, middle of the field. He's got through. 35-30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!